Welcome to Sweet Kicks with Bricks, the show which helps you decide if a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on or a try before you buy. Now here's your host, Barry Ricks.
Hey guys, welcome to Sweet Kicks with Bricks. I am your host, Barry Ricks, and today's Kickstarter highlight is Trove, the Crystal Caverns, and I have the mastermind behind the game himself. I have Patrick. How's it going today, Patrick?
Good. How are you doing, Barry?
Good. Thanks for being on the show. I know that having a Kickstarter and also having a day job, it could be quite busy.
And a baby.
So let's just pile it all on. If you weren't drowning enough, right?
Right.
So, awesome. Well, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your experience with making games?
Sure. I am a programmer who lives here in lovely St. Paul, Minnesota. I actually work in Minneapolis. I have been designing board games off and on since about 2000. I've been shopping some around. I had one published before I got into self-publishing. Got into self-publishing with my first game, Trick or Treat, which was a set collection, like trick-taking, Halloween-themed card game, and a little bit of worker placement in there too. It's a pretty solid game for $20, I got to say. And
there you go.
And now I've moved on to kickstarting Trove, the Crystal Caverns, which funded in 29 hours.
Nice, and that's got to make you feel really good.
It does,
right?
Make me feel really good.
It's a nice natural high right there,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I think we did a really good job mobilizing people. Just getting people interested and ready to go and interested and curious about the game before we started the Kickstarter. So it was good.
Definitely, and we'll pick your brain about that in a second. But why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about what Trove is and what they can expect?
Sure. So Trove is a 2 to 2, 3 or 4 player game. It might be a 5 player game if the Kickstarter goes far enough. And Trove is an asymmetrical dungeon crawler. So instead of having everyone play a party of adventurers versus a GM or versus a sort of AI monsters like in Descent or Mice and Mystics, everyone is playing a role inside of the dungeon's ecology. So if there's one player, which there should be, they play as the knight, and the knight is, she's adventuring around inside of the cave, she's picking up treasures, and she's looking for the dragon to kill the dragon. If the second player is several tribes of goblins who are trying to defend the cave from the knight, and so they win by killing her, and they have sort of a push-your-luck style game that they're playing. The third player can either be the dragon who is trying to escape the cave before the knight kills him, or can be the cave itself. And so then they handle how the map grows, what events happen, and things like that. And the cave wins by getting all the tiles, because the cave is made out of tiles, into play and then collapsing them on the players.
Yeah, I really like that concept of, having the cave as one of the characters you can play, so you're out to get everybody.
Yeah, and it's pretty menacing, and I like playing it. It's very subtle, and then when people finally see what you're up to, they're like, oh no,
They're like, oh, come on.
And it's too late. You shouldn't have trusted a malevolent cave, is a favorite expression from playtesting.
I know, you're an adventurer, you should have known better to go into caves, right?
Right, so.
Well, it sounds really exciting, and one of the things that definitely drew me to your Kickstarter was the artwork of it. Did you do the art yourself, or did you hire someone to do that for you?
I wish I could say I did the artwork myself.
don't we all wish we could say that?
Yeah. David brought to me. Let's rewind a little bit. So David is the original designer of Trove. He came up with the concept. It was his first game, and he felt like it could use a steady, polished hand to kind of come in and develop it. So that's where I came in and took over as the developer and the publisher.
He just needed someone with a little bit more experience to help him
exactly.
Along the way.
Mentor
him.
Yeah, and his game was it was very good. There was a lot of great ideas. It was also very swingy, and there was a lot of luck. And so I've spent the last several months of playtesting just grinding out the luck. And so he came to me with 3 artists that he had in mind and sort of a couple of art styles he'd collected together. I think he was inspired a lot by, Ocarina of Time. And so, that was kind of one of his like, you know, like that's how he kind of wanted it done. And we talked about it for a little while, and then I approached the three artists whom he had already approached and talked to them about it. We settled on Kyle Theron. I think he's been a great choice. He's an amazing person to work with. There's like no personality issues with him, so I really enjoy that part. And beyond that,
that's good.
No
clashing.
Yeah, there's no clashing. And beyond that, his talent is amazing. Obviously, I mean, he's really brought the characters to life. He's done a really, you know, with our direction, and it's been a treat to work with him.
But no, I totally agree, because like I said, that's one of the things that kind of drew me to it. So how long does the game take to play, and what kind of age group are you shooting for?
Yeah, I think like your first game can be 90 to 120 minutes. We usually clock in around 60 to 90 minutes.
Just to get the first game's always take longer because you're learning it and everything.
And there's a lot to learn because you're not just your role is simple, but the way that the other players' roles, you have to understand them to get into the game, and then the way that they interact, you start to see it, and then you go, oh, and then you want to start the game over because you now realize that, you know, how it's going to work for you.
You're like, oh, I should have done that instead.
That's pretty frequent. So it takes about 60 to 90 minutes. Two-player games, I can belt through in like 30 to 45 minutes, which I did quite a bit in the early days of... I went through about 10 iterations of the Goblins before I was happy with them, and so I played a lot of solo games between the Knight and the Goblins to get them right.
Nice.
But yeah, I would say we'll put 60 to 90 minutes on the box. I haven't really played it with too many young people yet. I'd like to. I know a group in one of the suburbs of Minneapolis contacted me, and they asked me to come and play, and they have a 10 and a 13-year-old in the group. So I'm interested to see how that goes. But, you know, right now we're putting 13 and above on the box. So.
Okay. Well, no, that's good. I mean, obviously, I mean, just looking at the Kickstarter, for those of you that are listening, definitely go check out the Kickstarter, and you could see kind of the components of the game, and each character has their different, like, you could describe as a character sheet with different abilities, different things that they're doing. And so it would take a little bit more sophistication than, you know, like, you know, you're not going to be playing with your 5 or 6 year old, so to speak.
Yeah. One of the stretch goals we had talked about and I started brainstorming was to create a kind of a roll and move game on the back of the Knights board that would kind of recreate some of the thematic elements, but not necessarily the complexity of the game, and just have that available as like at the, you know, like the $100,000 level or something like that, to be like, hey.
Yeah, kind of like a little expansion.
Yeah, yeah. And it would, and so then, you know, all the standees and all the treasure chests would just be pieces that you'd use in this roll and move game. We'll keep developing it. I'm not going to hold my breath. I would hold my breath to see if it gets done in time.
As we're recording today, your Kickstarter still has 18 days left to go, and you guys are already well successfully funded, so congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. It was very humbling, and I really appreciate the effort that all the people I've been working with have gone through to get us to this point. I worked on it. I was working on it really hard for the last 3 months before the Kickstarter hit. My wife is, she's definitely saying you have two jobs now, and I appreciate her help dealing with that. And I
shout out to the supportive wife.
Thank you. And I've been making time for Alice, but at the same time, like, it's, you know, I know I've been pretty involved, and so to see that happening, like, I was like, just like crazy with like nervousness and excitement when the campaign started. And then I think we hit $3,000 the first hour, and I was like, yeah, we're going to be fine. And I felt really good. And then like the next day, it just kind of, you know, it wasn't slowly creeping up. It was creeping up pretty fast, but I was still like, is it going to make 18,000 today? Like, what's going to happen? And I felt so relieved and so overwhelmed when it did happen. And I really appreciate everyone that's helped us. For helping us get this far.
Yeah, and like kind of like we mentioned, you know, that's just, you know, the first 29 hours funded, and, you know, that's super exciting. And it just feels really good when you see that support you have from the community of people that you've built up in the past, or with, you know, people that you work with and so forth. So my question is that we have a lot of aspiring developers and designers that are listeners and that might want to be starting their own Kickstarter.
Yeah.
If you could give them one good tip of advice that you felt has been beneficial for you about running a Kickstarter.
Sure. May I give two pieces of advice?
Oh, please do.
Okay. So the one thing that I see happening a lot, and I'm surprised by this, is people think that their game is very stealable and very... like the intellectual property is extremely valuable, and it is like that is that's all you have. But I think it is like this needs to be proof that you need to get your ideas out there early and talk about them with the public as often as possible. The work in progress thread on BoardGameGeek is now 700 posts long, and that's people all discussing with us the rules, what they liked about the game, what they didn't like about the game. There's some people who came in and said, I'm not going to back this game, but I think you should do this. And that's fine. But there's a lot of people who really got involved with the creation of the game and discussion about the narrative and the setting. And I think those people were very important to us. They've helped us spread the word very quickly. They helped us finish the game. They helped us develop the game. And that's been invaluable to us. And I see a lot of first-time publishers kind of like making people sign NDAs when they playtest, making people sign NDAs when they come and work on the rules and things like that. And I think that's just a really I mean, if you have some like crazy new concept that you need to guard, that's fine. But I think in the game industry, you want to get your message out there as quickly as possible.
You want as much exposure as possible.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, kind of like networking. You have to be able to network with as many people as possible so that word of mouth is very powerful, especially within the board game industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so getting it out there to as many people and encouraging them to spread the word themselves is immensely beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. I think unless you're Wizards of the Coast, which you already have good word of mouth, or
exactly
Hasbro, yeah, I think you should absolutely be talking up everything in any moment you can. So that's my first piece of advice. My second piece of advice is I think, you know, and I might be criticized for this, but I think the Kickstarter has really lowered the bar to get into the market, and that has been a great and beautiful thing. I mean, obviously, I probably wouldn't be as involved if it weren't for Kickstarter, so I'm not going to...
Oh, well, there's been a huge influx of,
right,
especially board games, because of Kickstarter. Like, there's so many games out there that wouldn't exist if Kickstarter didn't exist.
Right, and that's really exciting and very mobilizing, and I think it's great, too, because you're finally seeing some new voices, some new designers, some new, like, people who normally wouldn't be involved in the industry getting involved. And you're seeing new ideas. You're seeing new games that wouldn't have been made otherwise. And we're seeing some games get rejected by the market, which is interesting. But
yeah.
I think like before you take your first game and you say, it's halfway done, I'm going to go to Kickstarter, or I'm going to release this or whatever. I think like where the companies that have been successful versus unsuccessful at continuing past the first game is they've had a conscious design phase and a conscious development phase. And I think that's really important to distinguish the two, that the design is like where you say, yes, 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 all these ideas are going to go in. And the development is kind of the like, okay, how do we make this game marketable? How do we make this game simple enough that people can play it repetitively, and or not simple, but elegant enough that people can replay it and teach it quickly? And I think that has to be two distinct roles. Even if it's the same person, you have to definitely say, okay, now it's time for me to develop this game.
Yeah, you have to, you know, and also with development, you got to make sure that your finances are in order.
Yep.
You know, who's going to be printing your game? Where are you going to be shipping it from? And, you know, all those little things are, you know, very big parts of getting your game published.
Yes, absolutely. And so one of my goals for Trick or Treat, to be honest, was I didn't do a lot as much marketing as I should have, and maybe like in retrospect I could have done better with that. But the goal of Trick or Treat was to learn the process, to learn how to deal with manufacturing, to how to purchase a game, to how to warehouse it, to how to ship it, and to see if this is what I wanted to do down the road. And so my goal was just to like break even. We've made some money on it, but it's nothing incredible. But that was my goal, and I did okay with that. And so that's what that experience taught me, was that you need to kind of circle around and develop it. And a lot of people have complimented the Trove project because David came in with a great idea. A lot of work went into it, but then I was able to take it and like turn it into like a solid Euro for people to enjoy.
Yeah. You took a wrinkly shirt and ironed it out.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. So.
Well, the game looks fantastic. It's really exciting. Looks good, you know, and the concept is lots of fun. And you still have 18 days left to go, and you're already well successfully funded. So that's fantastic, and congratulations once again.
Thank you very much.
So, Patrick, thanks for being on the show today. I know, like we said, you're a busy man, and you and myself are on our lunch break right now. So we need to get back to our day jobs.
Yes.
So thanks again for being on the show. Why don't you tell people maybe where they can find more about you and Leader Games and more about Trove?
Sure. I have to go back and see how good our website is right now. You can go to our page, leadergames.com, and I do spell leader, L-E-D-E-R, games.com. And there you can purchase Trick or Treat, or you can look at the you can get referred to the Kickstarter page. You can also go to thisistrove.com. I think currently it's just going straight to the Kickstarter instead of the content that was originally on it. But eventually we'll put that content back up on there to talk about the game. And we'll probably, I would like to, I have a lot of variants designed, and I would like to be able to put those out there, just sort of unofficial, you can print this and try this on your own sort of thing. So,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome, and I will have all those links in the show notes, also to their Facebook and their Twitter accounts, and so you can connect with them there. And so, once again, Patrick, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Barry.
Thanks to Dan Patrice for our intro and outro. He is Dan the Board Game Man, and he is with the Geek All-Stars, and you can find him at thegeekallstars.com. And remember to back your projects wisely.
Thanks for listening to Sweet Kicks with Bricks. If you'd like to mail the show, send any questions, comments, or interview requests to sweetkickswithbricks@gmail.com. Sweet Kicks with Bricks is a Closet Geek Studios production. For more information on The Closet Geek, please head to closetgeek.net.